Chapter 6. Faith and Fear. Unity. Mortis Pulse. The boy who would be king was a boy no more. The emperor, in his ageless adulthood, walked the war-scarred tundra, cloaked against the cold. He held a naked blade low in one hand. The sword was dull in deactivation, the circuitry lining the blade cold and unlit. Evidence of battle lay strewn in every direction, from the churned earth of shell craters to the remains of warriors on both sides. He walked between the bodies, knee-deep and in their thousands, as the snow began to fall in a miserable grey spill. Around him, warriors in clanking, crunching armour plate strode among the fallen, dragging comrades from the corpse heaps and executing wounded foes with swift plunges of cackling chain blades. The emperor paid heed to none of this. The theatre of a battle's aftermath held no claim on his attention. He walked on, stepping over his own injured men who called for his aid, approaching a ring of his elite warriors. They guarded a lone, grey-haired figure clad in an unreliably cloned fur cloak. The captured man hugged himself against the biting cold, standing a little hunched over from his wounds. He looked up as the emperor approached. He smiled without mirth, showing bloody teeth.
"So, this is how it ends."
The emperor stood still, saying nothing. The wind pulled at his long hair. The weak sun glinted in flashes from his lowered sword.
"Why?"
the captive asked bitterly.
"Why annihilate my people like this?"
"Your people will be allowed to live on," replied the emperor. "Your army and you yourself could not."
"The Emperor of Terror?"
the grey-haired captive said with a laughing sneer. Blood ran from the corner of his mouth. The wound in his gut was eating him alive.
"No," said the emperor. "The Emperor of Mankind."
The prisoner hawked blood onto the snow.
"Of mankind now? One nation wasn't enough for you. Not even one world. So you'll take your cancerous touch to the stars."
"Your defiance is ill-placed," the emperor replied.
"Arrogant beast,"
he wheezed through the ruination of his chest.
"Hubris beyond reckoning. Madness beyond definition."
The emperor turned into the wind, narrowing his eyes as he looked across the ravaged battlefield.
"And yet, victory."
"Tyrant!"
the captive screamed.
"Butcher of the enlightened!"
Spit sprayed into the evening air, steaming where it landed.
"Apostate! Heretic!"
The emperor endured this spittle-punctuated tirade with a quiet patience, somewhere between dignity and immunity.
"I bring illumination," he said.
"You bring damnation!"
the captured warlord raged.
"I warned you, priest," said the emperor. "Long ago, I warned you. We stand here now because of the choices you made."
"I pissed on your warnings then,"
the captive snapped back.
"As I piss on your enlightenment now. Let the sword fall. I go to my god's embrace. And with my last breath, I will curse the blood in your veins."
One of the custodians encircling him moved forwards, pounding the butt of his guardian spear into the side of the man's head. Though he pulled the blow, scarcely seeking to injure, let alone kill, it was enough to break the man's eye socket and burst the orb within, turning it to shattered jelly. The captive warlord went down into the snow, howling, clutching his savage skull.
"Restrain yourself, Sagittarius," the emperor said.
The custodian hesitated, bowed his head to his master, then returned to the ranks. And then, as the kneeling prisoner cried out and pressed frostbitten hands to his broken face, the emperor spoke to a soul that shouldn't be there at all.
"Greetings, Ra."
Ra remained back from the gathering, his gaze drifting between the emperor and the custodians. The latter wore suits of armour far less ornate than the one he wore himself. These were his kindred in the years before he joined them. They still waged wars against the techno-barbarian hordes claiming dominion over Terra, before the rise of the legions and the commencement of the Great Crusade.
Sire, he greeted the Emperor.
As ever, nothing about his surroundings felt like a dream or a vision. The wind whipped at Ra's royal crimson cloak. The charnel house reek of the battlefield threaded its way through his helm's filtration systems. Somehow it always did. His master turned, leaving the custodians wringing the wounded prisoner. The Emperor's face was serenely troubled. Within it, Ra saw several shifting visages. The worried concern of the boy who would be king, the stern resolve of the great crusader, the tranquil caution of the ruler of all mankind.
You received a mortis pulse, I suspect.
From the Protector, said Ra. You sensed it?
No. I sensed the entity in the outward tunnels. The ancient presence drawing nearer to the walls of the impossible city. I sensed when it struck. No Protector could survive that. When it struck, I sensed its name.
I imagine your slain Protector sought to inform you of this in the only way he was able, via his mortis pulse. Most likely the message conveyed the creature's name. The Protector's audio transmission was nothing more than etheric shrieking.
You have heard the warp creatures speak Gothic in battle, Ra. They draw such knowledge from the minds of the slain, leeching human thought to form threats, challenges, and the like. Yet they lack language and identity as human cognition recognizes such things. The etheric shrieking was its name. I heard it, felt it myself.
At Ra's boots, a fallen warrior, one of the crudely armored thunder warriors who had once marched at the Emperor's side, sought to crawl across the frozen ground. Ra ignored the dying man, doubting he even existed to the wounded warrior. The Emperor noted the custodian's hesitation.
Do you doubt me, Ra?
I don't know if it's doubt, sire. It's more a lack of comprehension.
Your comprehension of psychic and etheric principles has never been as effortless as Jaceric's, or as accepting as Constantine's. But this concept should not be beyond you.
Despite their surroundings, Ra snorted a brief laugh.
Oh, you flatter me, my Emperor.
The Emperor ignored the weak attempt at sarcasm.
When I speak to you, to others, am I speaking aloud? Does my mouth move and form the shapes of human language? Does a human voice emerge? Or is it merely how mortal minds process my presence and my psychic will?
Ra nodded. This, at least, was familiar ground. Many were the times that the Emperor had faced allies or foes, speaking countless tongues without hesitation, and even those with no grasp of the same languages and lexicons had perfectly understood the master of mankind's words.
It is a similar principle, the Emperor stated.
Why would a demon cry out its name?
The Emperor's dark eyes flickered at his bodyguard's choice of words.
They do so almost unceasingly. They emanate the concepts and moments of emotion that gave them form. Humankind interprets those emanations as sound, the shrieking and roaring you hear when you do battle with them. They are declaring what they are. You hear it as who they are. The one we speak of now is the entity born from the first murder. When a human first took the life of another outside of the need to survive.
Ra said nothing. The Emperor's eyes unfocused, as if he looked back to that very moment in antiquity. When he spoke again, his voice was softer, mellifluous with distraction.
So many minds look to the taming of fire as the moment humanity tore itself apart from the melange of biological life on old Earth, elevating mankind above the level of beasts. They point to many such moments, and no two insights agree. Fire, the wheel, gunpowder, jet propulsion, the navigator gene. All wrong. It was that moment, Ra. A deed that even false, inane, insane religions have cursed throughout history. That one act set humanity irrevocably apart, feeding the beings of the warp, putting us on the first step of a long, long path. The Emperor's eyes cleared. He looked at Ra once more, not through him. And here we are, so much further along the path, still seeking to leave it. Ra stood in silence, feeling the wind caressing his face with unwanted fingers. The 10,000 were blessed above any others, and philosophical discussions with the Emperor were hardly unknown to them. But the bleak severity of his master's words turned Ra's blood slow, sluggish, and cold. "The end of empires," the Emperor said. "My king?" "You cannot reweave warp creatures' names from base concept to human language without an element of psychic adaptation in the translation. As close as it can be rendered into Gothic, that is what the entity's name means. The end of empires." Now truly Ra's blood ran cold. Ice flooded his veins in its place. "Sire, why did you summon me again so soon?" The Emperor turned, and Ra followed without needing to be beckoned. Together they walked back through the battle's aftermath, accompanied by the cries of the wounded and the snap-crack of execution gunfire. As they approached the circle of custodians and the kneeling, bleeding warlord, Ra couldn't help but look at the past incarnations of his own kindred. There was Jassarik, tall and proud. Constantine, stoic and observant. Sagittarius, choleric and wild. To human eyes, each of the gathered warriors would look scarcely different to any other. But to Ra, each was as distinct as separate songs. How humbling it was to see them like this, walking the scarred earth of terror in the time before he stood among their number. A handful of years after this moment, Constantine Valdor would come for him, taking him as a child from...
"Tell me, Ra," said the Emperor.
He aimed his blade at the kneeling warlord.
"Tell me what you see."
Ra followed the silver sword down to the wounded man. He knew of this battle from the archives, had seen Picts ripped from primitive helmet footage of the conflict playing out. He had even seen a few rare surviving murals depicting the man in robes of flowing red addressing vast crowds. Ra knew who the defeated warlord was.
"The priest king of Maulan Sen," Ra said, "in the moments before you executed him."
"That is a title and a moment in time. What do you see?"
"A man. A man kneeling on the snow."
"That is better," the Emperor agreed.
He stepped closer to the kneeling man, activating his blade. Fire cobwebbed down the circuits lining both sides of his sword. None of the gathered warriors paid any notice, nor did the warlord himself.
"I met him long before he was the priest king," the Emperor said. "He began as a holy man, a mendicant preacher wandering the northern wastes, gathering untainted food and purified water, giving it freely to those in need. He claimed it was his calling, and that his God lived in his kindness. It was a calling, of course. A call that was answered by the beings of the Immaterium. They gave him the power to feed his beleaguered tribe and heal their ills, and his clan grew. When savage winters ate away at the other tribes, his clan sheltered beneath the protection of his power. He kept them fed, protected and unseen from the eyes of their hunting foes. Soon, hundreds of men and women were huddling for warmth within his mercy, and offered their thanks to the God that he believed he served. Yet each miracle took more effort, Ra. more sacrifice. The end always justified the means. First, the conundrums were moral in nature. What does it matter if another clan starves, if it allows his tribe to survive? Soon enough, the rituals grew more occult in order to achieve their ends. What is the murder of a rival, if that death guarantees another 10 years of peace? What is the life of one child, if the offer of its bloody beating heart will ensure a monarch's immortality? Do you see? Ra saw, just as he had seen the monuments to massacre in the Pict archives from the fall of Morlun Sen. The warp rarely makes itself known in manifest form. The damnation flooding the webway is the crescendo of its siren song. Its immensity and physicality is what makes the threat so unprecedented. Far more often, the warp seethes behind the veil. It curdles thoughts inside a skull. It inks the blood in men and women's veins. And that is enough. More than enough. It brings us to moments like these, in the company of ambitious, faithful men, too proud to see their own deception. Ra stared down at the kneeling, bleeding priest king. Gone were the gene abominations and witchcraft-marked men in their thousands that had formed his ragged armies. He was alone, moments from breathing his last. Soon his sick blood would taint the Emperor's blade. "Think of this man's clan," continued the Emperor. "As a holy man, he had begun with offers of food and the promise of survival. Sensing his susceptibility, the warp darkened around the candle flame of his life's light. He prayed, and the warp answered. Soon his people were too numerous to hide. Other tribes came for his clan's riches. This man, this revered holy lord, led his people to the machines of the old ages, cloning and replicating and gene-forging flawed warriors to wage war for territory. The clan branded their own flesh and ran to war alongside these genetic brutes, crying up to the sky for the same power their overlord enjoyed. And how far they had fallen, committing any act in the belief of their own righteousness, all from superstition, all from ignorance, all because one charismatic man believed that the powers that heeded his calls could be trusted. By the time he realized they could not, he believed himself powerful enough to control them, independent enough to resist them. What harm in one more gift if it allowed his clan to thrive? What harm in one more sacrifice if it ensured a strong harvest or victory in a coming war? And, when it came time to die, what would this powerful, independent man do? Would he go silently into the ground? Would he slumber upon a funeral pyre? Or would he, for the good of his people, reach for longer life at any cost? Ra still stared at the defeated monarch. The custodian knew all there was to know from the archives. He knew of the barbarity practiced by the Morlun Sen Confederacy. He had seen picked evidence of the bone pits, those Golgothan barrows. Every day of his adult life he had fought alongside other gold-armored warriors who had been there for the dismantling of the Confederacy itself.
Superstition and ignorance always attract the warp's denizens, continued the Emperor. For the core of religion is the twinned principle of arrogance and fear. Fear of oblivion, fear of an unfair life and an arbitrary universe, fear of there simply being nothing, no great and grand scheme to existence. The fear, ultimately, of being powerless.
The custodian narrowed his eyes. Rarely did the Emperor elucidate his reasoning in such stark terms.
And why now? To what end? Ra felt the prickle of unease making its threading way up his spine.
Look at him, Ra. Truly look at him.
Ra looked. The priest king could hardly have appeared less like his treacherously magnificent depictions, with his red robes of office reduced to scorched rags hanging at the edges of his broken armour, and the cloak of cloned fur blackened from flamer burns. The great demagogue stared up at the emperor with the unshattered half of his face dirtied by blood and matted hair.
Sire, I don't...
But he did. Talons rippled in the shadows cast by the man's cloak, glassy and obsidian, impossibly liquid in their caresses. Claws clicked and scratched against one another inside the wide pupil that looked like a hole drilled into the yellowing white of the priest king's remaining eye. Bulges wormed their maggoty way through the man's veins, bubonically swollen. The defeated warlord, this impoverished and humbled ruler, was riven from within.
What am I looking at, sire? What is this?
Faith, said the emperor. You are seeing his faith through my eyes. Morland Sen's massacring priest-king is... what? Another of the Unification War's warlords? Terror had hundreds of them. He died beneath my executing blade, and history's pages will mark him as nothing more. And yet, his life is the path of faith in microcosm. Once a wandering preacher feeding the weak and the lost, ending as a blood-soaked monarch overseeing pogroms and genocides, his teeth stained by cannibal ritual, his skull a shell for the toying touch of warp entities he does not realize he serves. Every act of violence or pain that he performs is a prayer to those entities, fueling them, making them stronger behind the veil. What he believes no longer matters when everything he does feeds their influence. This is why we strip the comfort of religion from humanity. These are the slivers of vulnerability that faith cracks open in the human heart. Even if a belief in a lie leads us to do good, eventually it leads to the truth, that we are a species alone in the dark, threatened by the laughing games of sentient malignancies that mortals would call gods.
Ra wiped his snow-flecked face with a gauntleted palm. His breathing was calm, his heart was slow, yet his fingers trembled.
Are they gods?
What is a god? The emperor replied at once,
though without challenge. He sounded curious, not defiant.
I don't know, sire.
A being of great power, perhaps? Am I, then, a god?
Of course not.
Is a god the focus of prayer and ritual, then?
You are named in a god's honour, Ra.
A god of the sun. How many cultures have worshipped the sun, or given its arcing journey into the responsibility of a godling's care? More than even I can count. More than even I have seen. Each sun god or goddess bore a different name and was revered by different people. The sun rose and fell as it always has. Did it do so because of their prayers and offerings?
Against all odds, Ra gave a mirthless, unpleasant smile.
No, my king.
Look at the sky above us now. Overcast with the coming storm. Most humans would name the shade of the clouds grey in various languages. How are we to know if the grey one man sees is the same hue seen by the woman at his side, or the grey his mother and father saw? A blind woman would see nothing, but she still feels the storm's approach on the wind. She knows the sky is grey because she has been told it is so, yet she has never seen it. What, then, is grey? Is it the shade I see,
or the hue seen by another man's eyes? Is it only a colour, or is it also the feeling of the wind against your skin promising a storm? Ra exhaled.
I understand.
The Emperor seemed suddenly weary. He shook his head, a rare moment of human expression.
Beings of varying sentience and influence exist, given different names by different cultures and species. Gods, aliens, entities. It matters not.
I don't think I want to know these things, sire.
Your wishes are irrelevant, Ra.
You will fight harder once you understand what you are fighting for.
That is why I tell you all of this.
A matter of practicality,
he asked the Emperor, taking no offence.
Not trust.
A matter of victory. You will see the war in the Webway as the battle for my dreams and ambitions as a ruler. But I have told you, it is the war for humanity's survival.
The sudden crack of an aggravated power field snapped Ra's focus back to the snowy tundra. Blood sizzled on the Emperor's blade. The Priest King's headless body toppled, neck stump steaming into the dirty snow. Sagittarius gripped the severed head by its long hair, holding it up to the miserable sky. He roared, and thousands of thunder warriors roared with him. The Emperor cleaned his deactivated blade on the dead man's cloak, then sheathed the sword across his back.
Always so barbaric, Sagittarius.
The custodian tossed the head onto the ground.
Exultant in victory, my king, that is all.
The Emperor rested an armored boot on the Priest King's head. Knee servos thrummed. He hesitated for the span of a single breath as all eyes fell upon him. Then the boot came down, grinding the trophy into the dirt beneath the snow. When he lifted his tread, nothing but wet, red shards remained, stringy with slick hair.
Burn the body, said the Emperor. Burn all of their bodies.
Thunder warriors came forwards, armed with flamers.
Awaken, Ra.
Sagittarius dreamed of unity, of his days at the Emperor's side. The title itself, Imperator, they had named him in High Gothic, was still new in those days. The Emperor was a warlord, a battle king, but not yet a king of kings. Terra had yet to be brought to its knees by bolter and blade. The Dreamer was a warlord in his own right, then. He'd breathed in the body stink and fecal scent of 100 battlefields in the hours after victory. He'd felt the caress of charnel winds against his flesh and carried a golden spear in his blood-stained hands across an entire continent. Days of strength. Days of glory. He was the first of his kind to die, and for this indignity, this unquenchable shame, they had actually honoured him. The Battle of Moreland Sen. That was the last day of joy. The last day before his bones were bound inside a cradle of penetrating cold, and his mind set aflame with the shame of failure. Sagittarius, that had been his name, his prime name. His golden armour had been wrought with etchings of his many names, all earned in triumph and honour, all granted by the Emperor himself. The Emperor as he was, not as he became. The would-be ruler of Terra, still so far from his ascension as the master of mankind. The Imperator was there at Moreland Sen, in the hours before the Thunder Legion met the Priest King's ravening hordes. Armoured in archaeotech and anachronism, his armour as much bait leather and bronze as ceramite, he stood upon a high rock as the rising sun turned the eagles on his armour to virgin gold. His army stood to the south, occupying the low ground. Their march to the enemy will be uphill, moving to ascend the rocky inclines in whatever formation they could hold. To the north were the enemy,
a horde of branded zealots and dirty wildlanders on the plateaus of their last mountain fastness, clad in motorized plate armor and cloaked in poorly cloned furs to brace against the cold. Lumbering brutes fleshed out their numbers, more evidence of gene-forging gone awry with witchery instead of vision. They would bleed. At last, with the fall of Morlun Sen, Nordic would be brought to heel. That blasted frozen land. In Sagittarius's memories, it was freezing to the bone, and surely it had been that way. But the cold was no surprise to him when he recalled it now. All of his memories were cold. The Emperor had looked down upon the armored ranks closest to him, crudely armored warriors in patched and remade suits of damaged ceramite. The campaign had been a long one, far more grueling than predicted. His forces at the final battle were outnumbered by 7-1, though such numbers would mean nothing come the dawn. The enemy's high walls meant equally little, and the treacherous ascent to lay siege meant the least of all. The Emperor's army would sustain casualties, as every army always did, but sacrifice was bred into their bones. Victory would be theirs by the day's end. The lives beneath his banner were there to be spent in the purchase of peace. Sagittarius had chafed against promised inaction that day. No warrior was ever truly still before a battle. They shifted, they shuffled. The rattle of so many suits of ceramite plating was a dull, constant clanking to rival an ocean's tide. The angry thrum of fiber bundle muscle cabling and active back-mounted power packs was the drone of a locust swarm, a monotone buzz that drowned out spoken words. The only reliable way to speak was over the radioracle network, which was still flawed by occasional static interference. The warriors closest to the Emperor, a mere 30 souls with Sagittarius among them, wore layered, precious Auramite gold, reflecting the warlord's own war gear. In the years to follow, their trappings would become cloaked in red and bulked by additional plating. But as they stood at Morlun Sen, they wore half-suits of sacred gold, and the men themselves were a jewel in the army's vanguard, guarding their master. Their war banner was the eagle's head of their royal lord, crossed by four bolts of lightning. Beyond the custodians were the ranks of the proto-legionaries in their grim, battered plate, thunder warriors. Even then, Sagittarius had known what fate these soldiers of unity would face. Their place was here, and their time was now. They would be the conquerors of terror, and then they would be discarded. Their armor was destined to stand in rows within the Emperor's private chambers and various war museums across Terra, and their deeds would be recorded in rich detail throughout Imperial archives. But far finer soldiers would be required to take the Emperor's war into the stars. Sagittarius, fallen yet not allowed to die, would be one of the many to spill Thunder Warrior blood. But not yet. Not today. Not on the morning of Morlun Sen. Here they would lose 7,581 warriors against the defiant tides of Morlun Sen's last defenders. He recalled how the Emperor ran a gloved hand through his wind-claimed hair, pulling it back from his dusky features. The wind had battered the crests atop the Thunder Warrior's helms.
Sagittarius, the Emperor had said in a voice that carried above the drone of armor.
Sagittarius, his helm adorned with a rearing eagle, turned to regard his liege.
My king.
It is time. Your spear, please.
Sagittarius offered it without hesitation, raising his spear for the warlord's reaching hand. The Emperor took the weapon, holding it fast in one gloved fist halfway along the haft, and lifted it high. He held it horizontally, ordering his men to hold position, as officers in the Bronze Epoch and Iron Era of Old Earth had done in the centuries before radioracle systems and the Vox networks that would follow. Sagittarius felt the army shift, their focus tightening as they turned their attention to the Emperor, watching, waiting. There was no speech, for the army had its orders set in stone the night before. There were no curses or oaths, for those had already been given and made before the horde assembled. The Emperor said nothing at all. He signalled the advance, punching the horizontal spear 3 times towards the lightning sky. And there he remained, as the regiments of the Thunder Legion shook the earth beneath their marching boots, advancing up into the foothills. His honour guard of 30 custodians waited with him, as did a host of banner-bearers, aides, runners, attendants, and advisers, each with their own stewards and guardians. Sagittarius watched the disorganized tide of soldiers making their way up the inclines. Their chaotic advance was as far from the implacable order of the Legiones Astartes as could be imagined, nor could they rely on the same arsenal of biological enhancements implanted within the true Space Marines. These hordes were a force to crush the techno-savages of the Unification Wars, no doubt, but against the alien breeds of the galaxy, the Thunder Warriors would have been annihilated. The Emperor was paying scant heed to the battle's opening, his patient gaze resting on the higher peaks. From there, the killing machines would soon rise. He handed the spear back to Sagittarius, who took it with due reverence. The Emperor checked the ornate bolter at his hip, one of the very first bolt guns, a progenitor for its kind, not a relic rediscovered from the dark age of technology, but an invention of the Emperor's own design.
Sagittarius.
This time the Emperor's mouth didn't move, and his voice was low, too low to be the warlord's true tone.
Sagittarius.
What remained of Sagittarius leaned his forehead against the cold surface of his vision lenses, staring out through the greasy red smears of reinforced transplastic.
Sagittarius, said one of his own kind, looking up at the armoured cradle that held his revenant bones. Rah, he mouthed, his toothless, scarred mouth full of a thick, oxygen-rich synthetic oil. Rah, intoned the speakers mounted in the armoured chassis of his walking tomb.
My apologies for interrupting your reflections, said the Tribune.
The dreadnought didn't move as a living being moved. It had none of the incidental and unnecessary gestures of natural motion. Its movements were statuesque and reserved, coming between bouts of unnatural stillness. It was easy to forget there was a living warrior interred within, though the exact parameters for a contemptor chassis to sustain life at the point of death was a philosophical argument the warriors of the 10,000 had engaged in more than once before. The life support systems suggested the warrior lived, yet the hull itself cradled a remnant in a sarcophagus that would truly die the moment the biological husk was disconnected. Internment within a dreadnought chassis straddled the border between both life and death, an intolerable weakness that required sacred machinery to maintain, coupled with a strength of purpose so unquestionably fierce that it defied the grave. The 10,000, supremely educated and philosophical souls all, had ultimately reached the only conclusion that mattered. Their hesitancies and doubts meant nothing. It was the Emperor's will that his warriors live and fight until they could no longer do either. That very testament was inscribed upon Sagittarius's armoured hull by the Emperor's own carving hand. Only in death does duty end.
Memories, the great golden machine replied. They cling to me, Ra. Sometimes it seems as though the mist brings them.
Ra had entertained the same thought more than once. The 2 custodians stood in the Godspire's courtyard, where whole stretches of the long-dead alien botanical garden were given over to prefab mechanicum architecture. A shanty town of Martian industrial ingenuity, dark against the pale Eldar bone and grey mechanicum gunmetal of the resurrected city. Sagittarius was undergoing maintenance within an open-sided engineering barracks. Sparks sprayed, the air reeked of sacred oils and fusing metal, A coterie of arming servitors and arkwrights worked the dreadnought shell, repairing the hull and reloading the arm-mounted weaponry. Each of Sagittarius's movements disturbed the technical ballet taking place around him, generating a chorus of complaints that he duly ignored. Bra stood before the tall dreadnought shell, which bore enough cracks and pits and dents across its golden surface that it resembled the surface of some asteroid-tortured planetoid, and tried not to see Sagittarius's ruination as a statement for the entire 10,000. Those who remained had all seen better days.
"Sometimes I see ghosts in the mist," said the dreadnought.
"There is no such thing, my noble friend. Ghosts are a fiction."
"Most of them are Eldar. I think they're begging. They reach out towards me. Not all of them are alien. I see familiar faces turned to smoke. The images of the 10,000 that have already fallen."
Ra watched as the war machine's weapons cycled, evidently eager to fire. Death hadn't soothed Sagittarius's easy and willing wrath. The dreadnought turned its hull in a grind of servos, and several of the attending machine adepts emitted binaric curses.
"Do you ever see ghosts in the mist, Ra?"
"No,"
Ra lied.
There came the sound of a machine slipping its gears, the dreadnought shell's attempt to vocalize the laughter of the revenant within.
"Very well. What do you need of me? There is much to do before the foe reaches us."
"Nothing more than you already give. I bring a warning for the battle to come." The dreadnought opened and closed its immense fist, as if testing its knuckle joints, then rotated its hand at the wrist with a grinding whir. Ra saw the pale face of the corpse within move behind the murk of the machine's eye lenses.
"What warning?"
"The Emperor and the Soulless Queen have warned of a warp entity possessing surpassing strength among the enemy hosts. It destroyed the Protector released by Commander Kroll, along with its war host." The dreadnought shifted with a clanking thud. Protectors, the Sicarian Alphas at least, rarely died easily. But it was the notion of the Emperor's warning that sat ill in Sagittarius's heart.
"Do we know its capabilities?"
"Little beyond its lethality." The golden war machine cycled its autoloaders slowly and smoothly, allowing the tech priests to study the motion for flaws.
"We should destroy it, Ra. Destroy it before it reaches the walls and we lose it inside the city. Once the fighting is street to street, disorder will reign."
"As it happens, I agree, but we can hardly sally forth in a grand charge when we're still evacuating the outward tunnels. The rearguard forces are aware of the threat, and the unifiers are seeking to map the creature's likely routes of attack. If we have that, we can lay an ambush."
"An ambush, then? Before it's loose in Kalistar?"
"Truthfully, Sagittarius, I'm more worried about it slipping past us and reaching the throne room." The dreadnought mused, its knuckles closing and opening and closing, betraying a habit its pilot had performed in life. Within its hollow palm, the magnetic coils of an embedded plasma gun ticked in metronomic idleness. Within the shell, the revenant of Sagittarius was studying the data streams, seeking reports.
"Did the Protector send a mortis pulse?"
asked Sagittarius. Ra keyed in a command on his ornate vambrace, the buttons elegantly forming part of the soaring eagle sculpted upon the Oromite. He threaded Alpha Row 25's final audiovisual transmission across a private vox link directly to the dreadnought. The playback repeated. After several seconds, Sagittarius rose to his feet in a harmony of whining snarls.
"What does that mean, that word?"
"You hear a word within that mess." Ra's surprise was brazen. "The Emperor sensed it as well. I hear nothing but Alpha Row 25's death."
"It repeats like the static of disconnection is breathing. Drak Nyen. Drak Nyen. Drak Nyen."
Ra heard it then. The Emperor's voice came back to him when his master had spoken of the name's meaning. Drak Nyeen, he repeated. The end of empires.